Violet looked kind of timid now that we were there. She took a deep breath and went over to say hi to Callista. I stood around and talked with Quendi for a few minutes. Quendi was at first really nice and normal, talking about how it was good to see that we were doing okay, and how she was okay and everything was fine. And then she started glaring at Callista, and she was chatting me like, "Do you think Callista and Link are doing it?" I shrugged and was like, "Yeah, I bet. He's such a pig. He did it with me like, oh, never mind." Quendi glared at Callista and popped a popcorn shrimp into her mouth from way down below with her thumb. She was like, "I'm tired of just being the friendly one who everyone like steps all over." "Yeah," I chatted. "How do you do that with the shrimp and your thumb?" "Okay, I'll show you. Hey, are you going out with Violet?" "Yeah." "That's great. I think she's meg nice." "Yeah. Callista says she's kind of stuck up, but I don't agree at all. Like, Callista's the one who stuck up." "Callista said that?" "Yeah. You want to try the shrimp thing on your finger?"
She showed me how to pop the shrimp. As she did it, I looked across the room and saw Violet talking to Callista, and both of them were frowning. I was worried that something bad had happened, so I M-chatted her like,
"Hey, beautiful. What's doing?" "Hey, handsome. Just talking with Callista, having a nice little chat. I made the mistake of saying we were back to the Picayune grind. Now she keeps going, Picayune, Picayune, and pretending I'm French. I wish I hadn't said anything."
I looked around me. Everyone was nodding their heads to music or had their eyes just blank with the feedcast. It was just a party, nothing but a party. From one direction, I heard a kid say, "I think the truffle is, like, completely undervalued." And from the other direction, a girl was saying, "But he never pukes when he chug-a-lugs." It was like nothing had happened. We were watching feedcasts as if our brains had never been invaded by the asshole. Logo was laughing with her front teeth showing as if she'd never been different from the rest of us, the one left with the feed when the rest of us didn't have it. Some guy was pouring a beer. Link and Marty were doing, like, acrobatics in the entryway, fighting invisible demons. And everything was completely normal. The truffle was completely undervalued.
Which the president denied in an address early on Tuesday.
"It is not the will of the American people, the people of this great nation, to believe the allegations that were made by these corporate watch organizations, which are not the majority of the American people. I repeat, not and aren't its will. It is our duty as Americans and as a nation dedicated to freedom and free commerce to stand behind our fellow Americans and not cast things at them. Stones, for example. The first stone. By this I mean that we shouldn't think that there are any truth to the rumors that the lesions are the result of any activity of American industry. Of course they are not the result of anything American industry has done. The people of the United States know, as I know, that this is just plain hooey. We need to remember that America is the nation of freedom, and that freedom, my friends, freedom does not lesions make."
The president is expected to veto the congressional.
The others in Mal. The party went on. I couldn't concentrate anymore. We watched Snowblind. The guy in it, he fell off a platform at a mob-owned ski lift and landed in powder next to a sexy assassin with a heart of gold. I was feeling strange sitting next to Violet, and she wasn't laughing, which was weirding me out. She was just sitting there. The feedcast went on, and they all went up the mountain on skis and shot at each other, and finally they all learned an important lesson about love. Then it was over. I went upstairs to take a whiz, and Marty and Link were dragging me into a bedroom.
"Unit," said Link. "Unit, you are about to walk through the mirror."
"It is time," Marty said, "for Bulb Tweaker."
"Oh, Unit," I was like, "is this malfunction?"
Hey, this is a great sight. It's fucking smooth as glass."
"Bulb Tweaker?"
"It's just a mild scrambler," said Link.
"I can completely see straight," said Marty. He pointed. "That's right in front of me."
There were other guys in there, too, and one girl. They were whispering. Someone had gone completely fugue on the bed.
"Do a burst, then crank it down to a slow burn."
"Okay," said Marty. "I'm going to go again."
"Unit," said Link, punching me on the arm. "Fly the friendly skies."
I was like, "Not tonight."
Come on, Unit.
I don't think Violet's into the Mal.
Oh, come on, Unit. She'll never know.
What is this, shitheads? I said. Cut the ABC after-school special.
She'll never know, said Link.
I said, what do we just go through, Unit? I whapped myself on the back of the head. Remember? Like, what do we just... Huh?
Huh?
Never mind.
What?
I said never mind.
Okay, said Link. You're lost. Here I go. You with, Marty?
I'm with.
They spread out their arms and closed their eyes, and you could see when it hit them. They got the shutter first, and then their heads rocked, and they were big stumbling, and they went backward, and there were all these people back there on the bed and a chair and the floor, blinded, doing the quiver. Link's tongue came out. It was purple from candy. I went out and to the bathroom. When I was done, I went back downstairs. Quendi and Violet were talking. Quendi was like, where's everyone? But I didn't tell her that they were up getting scrambled in the master bedroom. Violet asked if I wanted to walk out in the yard for a minute, and I said sure, so we went out. We were standing on the porch, and it was much cooler out there. The dome on the yard's pod was all blue, like it was night, which it was, I mean, up on the surface, but it was blue there at the house, too. We stood, leaning on the railing. The night was perfect. We shut out the music from the feed. It was funny, then, to look back in and see people moving to nothing. She said, you're quiet. I nodded. What's doing? She asked. No real one thing. We just stood there together. I said, you didn't like the feature. She said, it was okay. You didn't laugh. I like the mountains, all the pine trees. I'd like to go to the mountains. Wouldn't it be nice with a fire? I pictured the mountains and the fire and the snowball fight and let's get out of these wet clothes. And I said, yeah. Sure. I want to get out to the country, she said. She looked at me. What's really doing? I couldn't tell her about the guys going in Mal. I didn't want her looking at them while they were on the wall-to-wall carpeting and doing the quiver. I didn't want her to look at them as if she was sorry. Finally, I said, people have just gone so quick back to like before. Why? She said. What happened? I didn't tell her about them upstairs. I just told her about sitting in the living room and hearing the guy who was like the truffle was undervalued and the girl who was like he never pukes when he chug-a-lugs. I told her about them, and then I looked for the memory of them, which I still had, and I played it for her. She knew exactly what I was talking about. She went,
brittle. I feel like we're the only two of us who, like, remember the, like, the thing. People want to forget. You can't blame them.
She looked at me. She didn't say anything for a second. Then she said, my feed wear's damaged.
What? In your brain?
She put her hand up next to her scalp. It'll be fine, but I'm the only one who had damage. They're trying to fix it.
Well, what's wrong? Can you still get, like, stuff and shit?
She laughed. Yeah, both of them. I'm fine. But they say they have to find some way to make adjustments. Something happened when the guy hacked. Most people, the hack just jammed them for a while. Somehow it affected mine more. Something's still wrong.
Holy shit.
Do you remember one day when we were on the moon, the doctors took me out to talk to me alone? And then I came back and found you and took you up to the air loss garden? The doctors, they were talking to me about this. They said that it would probably stabilize. It hasn't yet.
Holy shit.
They say it will probably be fine.
Holy shit.
She patted me on the chest. Come, she said. The rose will bloom ere long.
Yeah. What fucking ever?
She watched me. I stared at her. I thought about Marty and Link going in Mal. She chatted.
What are you thinking about? Nothing. It can't be nothing.
I thought about Link and Marty's eyes rolled back, and I lied, like,
I'm just wondering whether he meant truffles the mushrooms or truffles the candy.
She laughed and touched my face. I felt like I was protecting her from something, and that felt good, like I was a man already. I hugged her like a man, and we kissed. For a long time, we stared at each other. I liked the way the synthetic breeze was on her hair. We stood, looking out at the shrubs and the motorboat up on a trailer, and I felt like I was in love, and our arms were around each other. She leaned close to my head and took a handful of my hair in her hand and pulled my head down. She whispered, "Keep thinking. You can hear our brains rattling inside us like the littler Russian dolls." Nudging. That night, the night after the party, I had something that I thought was a dream, with me at a great site where all the games were free and you could play anything. So I was thinking different about pretty dumb games like Turbo Checkers, because if you can get anything for free, what the hell? So I started one of them, which was this fantasy game, and I was putting on some elf gloves and stringing my bow when I could feel that someone was nudging my feed. They were nudging it, like with their cheek or nose. In my dream, I asked them who they were. In my dream, they told me they were the police. They asked me if I was a victim of the hack at the rumble spot. In my dream, I said yes. In my dream, they told me, okay, go back to sleep. In my dream, I said, who were they really? They said that they were going to be running some tests on me and that I should think about something else. I said that they weren't the police, so who were they really? They said, here is the lizard you have always been wanting. We took the liberty of giving it a nice new collar. I asked if all these games were mine. All yours, they said. All yours. Good night, sweetie. They're all yours. Take them. All yours. In my dream, I thought they were the hacker group, the Coalition of Pity. But when I woke up, I didn't remember that for weeks. What I remembered was just the games, which, once I was awake, I couldn't find, and the elf gloves, and the bow, and the lizard that was all mine.
America, a portrait in geezers.
I remember as the last forests fell, at about that time we would see hawks and eagles in their cities. People walked outside more back then. The temperature usually didn't get above 100. There were streets in the cities, and eagles flew over them, wobbling without moving their wings. I remember seeing the hawks perched on street lamps during those last days of the American forests. They had come from the mountains, maybe, or pine woods that were now two or three levels of suburb, but the hawks sat in our cities like kings. They would not look down from their lampposts as thousands of downcars went by underneath. It was like they sat alone on Douglas firs. I miss that time. The cities back then, just after the forests died, were full of wonders, and you'd stumble on them, these princes of the air on common rooftops, the rivers that burst through city streets so they ran like canals, the rabbits in parking garages, the deer foaling, nestled in dumpsters like a nativity.
Lose the chemise. It was maybe it was like 2 days after the party with the Never Pukes When He Chug-a-Lugs that Violet chatted me first thing in the morning, and she said she was working on a brand new project. I asked her what was the old project, and she was like, did I want to see the new one? I said, okay, should I come over to Su Casa? I've never been there. And she was like, no, not yet. Let's meet at the mall. And I was like, okay, sure, fine, whatever swings your string. And she was all, baby cakes, you swing my string, which is a nice thing for someone to say to you, especially before you use mouthwash. So I flew over to the mall near her house through the rain, which was coming down outside in this really hard way. Everyone had on all their lights until they got above the clouds. Up there it was sunny, and people were flying very businesslike. The mall was really busy. There were a lot of crowds there. They were buying all this stuff, like the inflatable houses for their kids, and the dog massagers, and the tooth extensions that people were wearing, the white ones, which you slid over your real teeth, and they made your mouth just like one big single tooth going all the way across. Violet was standing near the fountain, and she had a really low shirt on to show off her lesion, because the stars of Oh, Wow thing had started to get lesions, so now people were thinking better about lesions, and lesions even looked kind of cool. Violet looked great in her low shirt. And besides that, she was smiling and really excited for her idea. For a second, we said hello and just laughed about all the stupid things people were buying. And then Violet, she pointed out that regarding legs to stand on, I didn't have very much of one because I was wheeling around a wheelbarrow full of a giant hot cross bun from Bun in a Barrow. I said, yum, yum, yum. She was like, you ready? I asked her what the idea was. She said, look around you. I did. It was the mall. She said, listen to me. I listened. She said, I was sitting at the feed doctor's a few days ago, and I started to think about things. Okay, all right. Everything we do gets thrown into a big calculation, like they're watching us right now. They can tell where you're looking. They want to know what you want. It's a mall, I said. They're also waiting to make you want things. Everything you've grown up with. The stories on the feed, the games, all of that. It's all streamlining our personalities so we're easier to sell to. I mean, they do these demographic studies that divide everyone up into a few personality types, and then you get ads based on what you're supposedly like. They try to figure out who you are and to make you conform to one of their types for easy marketing. It's like a spiral. They keep making everything more basic so it will appeal to everyone. And gradually, everyone gets used to everything being basic, so we get less and less varied as people, more simple. So the corporations make everything even simpler, and it goes on and on. This was the kind of thing people talked about a lot, like parents were going on about how toys were stupid now when they used to be good, and how everything on the feed has its price, and okay, it might be true, but it's also boring. So I was like, yeah, okay, that's the feed. So what? This is my project. Is? She smiled and put her finger inside the collar of my shirt. Listen, she said. What I'm doing, what I've been doing over the feed for the last 2 days, is trying to create a customer profile that's so screwed no one can market to it. I'm not going to let them catalog me. I'm going to become invisible. I stared at her for a minute. She ran her finger along the edge of my collar so her nail touched the skin of my throat. I waited for an explanation. She didn't tell me any more, but she said to come with her, and she grabbed one of the nodules on my shirt. It was one of those nodule shirts, and she led me toward B. Brecker and Carl. We went into the store, and immediately our feeds were all completely B. Brecker and Carl. We were bannered with all this crazy, high-tech, fun stuff they sold there. Then a guy walked up to us and said, could he help us? I said I didn't know, but Violet was like, sure, do you have those big searchlights? I mean, the really strong ones? Yeah, he said. We have those. He went over to some rack and he took these big searchlights off the rack. He showed us some different models. The feed had specs. They showed us the specs while he talked. When he went to the back to get another cheaper searchlight, I said to Violet, what next? She whispered, complicating, resisting. B. Brecker and Carl were bannering us big. It was, we've streamlined the Tesla coil for personal use. You can even wear it in your hair with these new da-da-da and relax, yawn, and slump, while our greased cyber massage beads travel up and down your back, guaranteed to make you, etc., like that. I was like, okay, huh? But the guy came back, and he had another searchlight. He told us, you can see shit real good with this one. I have one of these on my up car. It's sometimes like, whoa, really, whoa. There was this one time, and I was flying along at night, and I shined the light down at the ground to look at the tops of all the suburb pods, and all over the top of them, it looked like it was moving, like there was a black goo. So I turned up the brightness, and I went down, and I shined it more bright, and it turned out the black moving goo was all these hordes of cockroaches. There were miles of them running all over the tops of the domes. They kept on trying to get out of the light, so wherever you shined it, there would be this, I'd like to mount the light on my belly, Violet said. Would that be possible? He looked at her funny. With a swivel head? Sure, then I could swivel it. What's this for? Something special, she said in this low voice. She rubbed my arm up and down sexily. He was like, whoa, I can't even think. He gave me the thumbs up. She winked at me. It was kind of a turn on. She got him to send her all the feed stats for the lamp, but then she didn't buy it. She didn't have it mounted. Instead, she thanked him a real lot, and then she took me out of the store, and I was starting to get the picture and think it was all pretty funny. We kept going from place to place asking for weird shit we didn't buy. She took me to a rug store and a store with old chests and pieces of eight and shit. And we went to a toy store, and she asked them to explain the world of Bleakazoid action figures, which is a dumbass name if I ever heard one, but they explained it all. It was mainly they were these muscular people from a parallel world, which is usually how it is. We didn't buy anything. We ran through the big hallway with her tapping her head, saying, hear that? The music? It was pop songs. They have charts that show which chords are most thumbs up. Music is marketing.
They have lists of key changes that get 13-year-old girls screaming. There's no difference between a song and an advertising jingle anymore. Songs are their own jingles. Step Lively, over here.
We went to a clothing store, and she held up all these stupid dresses, and the girl there was like, I'm helping a weird kid, so I'm going to be really fake. So she kept smiling fake and nodding really serious at all the dresses Violet held up and was like, oh, this will look great. And Violet said, I don't know. Do you think? He's pretty wide in the chest. The girl looked at me and I was frozen. So I said, yeah, I work out. Violet asked me,
what are you? What's your cup size?
I shrugged and played along, like 9.5. I guessed. That's my shoe size.
Violet said, I think he'd like something slinky, kind of silky.
I said, as long as you can stop me from rubbing myself up against the wall the whole time.
Okay, said Violet, holding up her hands like she was annoyed. Okay, the chemise last week was a mistake.
I practically started to laugh snot into my hand. We went to some more clothing stores, and we looked at all these dumb sweaters and pretended we liked them, and we looked at makeup that she wouldn't wear, and a gravel tumbler, and we went to a DVS pharmacy superstore, and she comparison shopped for home endoscopy kits. We were looking at the endoscopy kits when she started whispering to me,
for the last 2 days, okay, I've been earmarking all this different stuff as if I want to buy it. You know, a penny whistle. A barrel of institutional lard, some really cheesy boy pop, a sarong, an industrial lawnmower, all of this info on male pattern baldness, business stationery, barrettes. And I've been looking up house painting for the Antarctic homeowner and the way people get married in Tonga and genealogy homepages in the Czech Republic. I don't know, it's all out there, waiting.
I picked up one box. This one is the cheapest. You swallow the pills and they take pictures as they go down.
She said, once you start looking at all this stuff, all of these sites, you realize this obscure stuff isn't obscure at all. Each thing is like a whole world. I can't tell you.
How's your, I pointed at my head. How's your feedwear working out?
It's fine. You're not listening.
Oh, I'm just wondering. She asked me,
what do you think?
I like the guy in B. Brecker and Carl. I wonder if it's true about the cockroaches.
What do you think about resisting?
She asked me really hard. Her jaw muscles were sticking out. I said, sounds great, as long as I get to wear the chemise. She laughed. We went to dinner at a J.P. Barnegan's family extravaganza. We had mozzarella sticks, and then I had a big steak. She got a Caesar salad. There were free refills on the drinks. Afterwards, we were sitting there in the booth, and I asked her whether she wanted a ride home. She said no. I said, was she sure? She said yes. I said, what's doing with your parents?
What do you mean?
Well, with your house and why you have me meet you here instead. And why didn't your dad come to the moon when we were, you know? She looked at me funny. She said,
do you know how much it costs to fly someone to the moon?
I guessed, a lot?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot. He wanted to come, but it would have been like a month of his salary. He saved up for a year to send me. Then I went and that stuff happened.
He saved up for a year for you to go to the moon?
Yeah, she said. Hey, here's what you can do. You can drop me at the feed technician's office. I have an appointment.
We made out for a minute in the car. Then I flew her a few miles away to a technician. I left her there. Before I pulled out of the tube by his office, I looked back at her standing by the door. She had her hands on her elbows. She was pinching the elbow skin and pulling it. She waited there, pinching and pulling, and then went in.
Sniffling. That night, I chatted her after I went to bed. I was like, Violet? Violet? And she was like, hey. Hey there. It was great going to the mall today. I had a good time. I enjoyed that whole thing. Finally, she was like, I did too. I could tell something was wrong. It was something about the way she was sending things on the feed. I asked, are you crying? There was a long feed silence. I could hear programming. She was like, yeah, just for practice. What's doing? Never mind, she chatted. Never mind. Didn't you have a real good time? I wish you were here, she said.
I thought about her lying in bed, maybe in some pajamas so she was warm. I said,
I wish I was there too.
Look, she said, changing the whole subject. Look at everything I got from the feed. It's going crazy with everything we looked at today. It's trying to work for me. This perky voice on her feed said,
Hi, I'm Nina, your personal feed tech shopping assistant. Tired of that grossed-out smell in your mouth? Try Fresh Gorge Glottal Deodorant. Your boyf will thank you big time. Hey, Violet Dern, what a skip kind of day you had. You go shop, girl. Here's some more great info about all the brag stuff you asked about.
Violet started to forward me things. There were sites for the spotlights and the dresses and the endoscopy kits, and she sent them in flurries. Once they started coming, they started to call others to them, and I could feel them doing that call, and they were all around me. They came to us. It was like there were lots of friendly butterflies, and we were smeared with something, and they kept coming and coming, and their wings were winking beautifully, and more came. And they were landing on our fingers, and on our lips, and on our eyes, opening and closing, and we were going, whoa. Whoa, whoa, it was crazy. A new place. Being with Violet was great. She hadn't had much of the stuff you see on the feed when she was younger. A lot of it was too expensive, or her father just said no. But she'd watched all the shows about how other people live normally, and she really wanted to live like the rest of us. So she and her other homeschooling friends had tried to copy us. For example, he said she couldn't have toy guns because they were against his beliefs, so she had to pick up anything, pieces of wood or bent metal, and use them like a toy gun and pretend it was just as good as a real one made of plastic. I was afraid that she would be too smart for me, but she wasn't. I don't mean she wasn't smarter, because she was, but just that there was so much she hadn't done. She was like a little kid, all excited when I was just meeting her at the mall for the day, and we walked from store to store or went on the air slides or shopped underwater. She had hardly done any of it before. She was always new. We sat in the mall and made up stories about people who passed by. Shoppers walked around us on the concourses, their mouths moving, talking to people who weren't there. They were all muttering. We made up stories about how they'd given birth to monsters and addicts. We went into stores and we laughed and laughed. It was like she took my hand or I took her hand and we ducked through doorways and together we went to an old place and it was a new place. We went there holding hands. The Dimples of Del Glacie. Okay, but sometimes though, I did get worried that she was too smart for me. I don't do too good in School Inc. We were back in School Inc., so I was reminded pretty often that I was stupid. School Inc. is not so bad now, not like back when my grandparents were kids, when the schools were run by the government, which sounds completely like Nazi to have the government running the schools. Back then, it was big boring, and all the kids were meg null, because they didn't learn anything useful. It was all like, da-da-da-da, this happened in 1492, da-da-da-da, when you mix, like, chalk and water, it makes nitroglycerin and that kind of shit. And nothing was useful. Now that School Inc. is run by the corporations, it's pretty brag because it teaches us how the world can be used, like mainly how to use our feeds. Also, it's good because that way we know that the big corporations are made up of real human beings and not just jerks out for money, because taking care of children, they care about America's future. It's an investment in tomorrow. When no one was going to pay for the public schools anymore, and they were all, like, filled with guns and drugs and English teachers who were really pimps and stuff, some of the big media conglomerates got together and gave all this money and bought the schools so that all of them could have computers and pizza for lunch and stuff, which they gave for free. And now we do stuff in classes about how to work technology and how to find bargains and what's the best way to get a job and how to decorate our bedroom. It was still hard. And there were some times when none of us did good, and I felt stupid, and we all felt stupid, and Loga and Callista were like,
Oh my God, this is so dumb. Could the teacher be any more, please, condescending? Oh my God, I know. Like, thanks for the heaping helpings of yawn banquet.
I sat there with my palms pressed into my forehead, thinking about Violet at home being smart. I would think about some conversation we were having where I was dumb. Like, she was always reading things about how everything was dying and there was less air and everything was getting toxic. She told me about how things were getting really bad with some things in South America,
but she couldn't really tell exactly how bad because the news had been asked to be a little more positive. She said that it made her frightened to read all this kind of thing about how people hated us for what we did. So one time I said to her that she should stop reading it because it was just depressing. So she was like,
but I want to know what's going on.
So I was like,
then you should do something about it. It's a free country. You should do something.
She was like,
nothing's ever going to happen in a two-party system.
She was like,
da-da-da, nothing's ever going to change. Both parties are in the pocket of big business, da-da-da.
All that. So I was like,
you got to believe in the people. It's a democracy. We can change things.
She was like,
it's not a democracy.
I hated it when she got like this, because then she wasn't like herself. I mean, she wasn't like this playful person who drags me around the mall doing crazy shit. She was suddenly like those girls in School Inc. who sit underground and dress all in black with ribbing and get iron fixtures for their jaw. And they're like, capitalist fool, propaganda tool, holding up both hands, etc. When she said things like, it's not a democracy, suddenly I couldn't stand to be having this whole conversation. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
And she was like,
it's not.
And I was like,
oh, okay.
And she was like, no, it's not a democracy. And I was like,
yes, it is.
And she was like, no, it isn't. And I got sarcastic, so I was like,
no, sure, it's all fascist, isn't it? We're all fascists.
Then she was like, really gently,
no, please, I'm not trying to be an asshole. It's not a democracy.
I was like,
then what is it? A republic. It's a republic. Why? Because we elect people to vote for us. That's my point. So why is it like that? Because if it was a democracy, everybody would have to decide about everything.
I thought about that.
We could have everybody vote from the feeds, instantaneous. Then it would be a democracy. Except,
she said,
only about 73% of Americans have feeds.
Oh, I said.
Yeah.
And so I felt stupid.
There's that many who don't?
Then she told me,
I didn't used to have a feed.
I was like,
what do you mean?
She was quiet, like she didn't want to chat. It was that kind of quiet. And then she went,
we didn't have enough money when I was little, and my dad and mom didn't want me to have one. Holy shit. I got it when I was 7. I'm sorry,
I said.
For what? For not knowing, you know, that so many people don't have them. No one with feeds thinks about it,
she said.
When you have the feed all your life, you're brought up not to think about things, like them never telling you that it's a republic and not a democracy. It's something that makes me angry, what people don't know about these days. Because of the feed, we're raising a nation of idiots, ignorant, self-centered idiots.
Suddenly she realized what she'd said, that she'd just called me a self-centered, ignorant idiot. She stopped, and she started stumbling all over her words. And she was like,
I didn't mean, it's not really important, but just, I believe.
And so on. I just sat there and watched her. I could tell I was liking to watch her trip up over her words while I was doing this angry face. So I didn't move my mouth or chatter or anything. I just sat and she felt bad. And then she even chatted me,
I'm sorry.
Which was bad because it showed that we both knew that I was stupid. And then I looked away. I looked away and she put her hand on my arm, which was the worst because it was the consolation prize. That night when I got home, I was looking out the window, being sorry, and my mother was like, what's wrong? I didn't answer for a while. Finally, I said, do you think I'm stupid? I mean, am I dumb?
You're a non-traditional learner.
Smell Factor said,
no, he's not, he's dumb.
My mother asked me,
is this re-Violet?
No.
Come on. Is it re-her? Because she shouldn't make you feel stupid. That's not good.
Mom, it's un-re-her, okay?
She should be proud of you.
I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want my mom to think Violet was a snob. Violet wasn't a snob. I was just dumb. My mom came over and said to me,
you're a wonderful boy. I know I'm your mom, but I can say that you're a wonderful boy. Isn't he, Steve?
My dad was conked out on the table, going over the news on the feed. But he pulled himself up, and she was like,
isn't he a wonderful boy?
And my dad was like, sure, yeah, yeah. And my mom was like,
you're as handsome as a duck in butter.
Where does she live, anyway? My dad asked. I don't know, like 200 miles from here. I've never been there. Why? Just asking.
You're a catch, said my mother. You're pewter.
That was no help at all, and the next day I did really bad on a test, and I came home, and Violet chatted me to say she couldn't talk. She was, I don't know, learning ancient Swahili, or building a replica of Carthage out of iron filings, or finding the cure for entropy or some shit. And I was sitting around, staring at a corner of a room where two of the walls and the floor came together, and my mom and dad caught me doing it, and my mom came up and hugged me. I could tell it was all staged. They tried to find me. I patted my mom a little on the back, enough to say, "Okay, yeah, enough for affection. You can back off now, Ma." And she did, and I hoped they would leave, but they weren't done. So I had to sit there and listen to about me. She said, "You're just the boy we wanted. You're good enough for any girl. You're just what we asked for." My dad was meg uncomfortable and kept on moving from foot to foot. My mom ran her fingers through my hair and rocked me back and forth, even though I was standing. And she said, like a poem, "You've got your father's eyes and my nose."
"And my mouth," said my dad.
"And my hands," said my mom.
"And the chin, dimples, and hairline of Dalglacy Murdoch."
"What?" I said. "This big actor," explained my mom. "We thought he was like the most beautiful man we'd ever seen in our lives."
"Well," said my dad, "we thought he was going to be big."
"We saw a feed cast with him in it the night you were made." My mom winked.
"What?" I said. "What was his name? You never told me about the actor."
"He was, what did you say his name was again, Steve?"
"Dalglacy Murdoch."
"Dalglacy Murdoch," said my mom, kind of smoothing things over. "That's right. And we thought he was the most beautiful man we'd ever seen. So after the movie, we went right to the conceptionarium and told them, 'We want the most beautiful boy you've ever made. We want him with my nose and his dad's eyes, and for the rest, we have this picture of Dalglacy Murdoch.'"
I said, "I've never even, like, heard of Dalglacy Murdoch."
My father played nervously with his pinstripes.
He didn't really take off the way, like, we expected. After that movie, he was mostly, I guess, small roles."
"He starred in some things," said my mom. "Steve, he starred in a lot of things."
"Straight to daytime," said my dad.
"Honey, he was the most beautiful actor ever. So we went into the conceptionarium and told the geneticists what we wanted. And your father went into one room, and I went into the other, and..."
Hey, I don't want to hear. "You know what he was in?" said my dad. "Remember Virtual Blast? He played the 5th Navy SEAL. With the crew, you know, coughing."
"He was in a feature with all the crazy utensils," said my mother. "A few years ago, that one, he was the doorman in the pillbox hat."
I had already pulled up a list of his feed features, and I was going over them. None of them got more than 2 stars. My parents are checking my feed. I could feel them, like, prodding it. And my mom was like,
"It doesn't matter what he was in."
And she m-chatted something to my dad. And so he was like, no, that isn't the point."
"What we're talking about," said my mother, "is how handsome you are and how brave you are."
"We've decided you've been through a lot," said my father.
"You've been very brave," my mother repeated.
"Yeah," I said. "I just fell down. The guy touched me and I just, like, fell down." "You were brave," said my father.
"We've decided you need a little cheering up," said my mother.
I started to feel a little better. I could feel their feed shifting toward a common point, some kind of banner they were pulling up.
"We've decided to get you your own up car," said my mother.
"You can pick it," said my dad, "within certain limits."
"Oh, God," I said. "Oh, God! Oh, Mom, Dad, this is... holy shit. Holy shit. Are you kidding? Oh, you are like the best mom and dad ever."
"We're not kidding," said my dad. "Here's the banner."
And it unwrapped in my head. A banner for a dealer and links to other dealers and a big line of credit. And I was hugging them and I was like, holy shit. By tomorrow, I would be driving to pick up Violet in my own goddamn up car. And suddenly, I didn't feel so stupid anymore.
What the president meant in the intercepted chat. This was nothing but a routine translation problem. It has to be understood that when the president referred to the prime minister of the Global Alliance as a big shithead, what he was trying to convey was, this is an American idiom used to praise people by referring to the sheer fertilizing power of their thoughts. The president meant to say that the prime minister's head was fertile, just full of these nutrients where ideas can grow.
It really was a compliment. We should say again that any attempt to withdraw the Alliance's diplomatic presence from American soil will be taken as a sign of ill will, and we are likely to respond with the most stringent...
Lift. My father took me to test drive up cars on Saturday. I tried a lot of them in the feed sim, but it's not the same as actually driving them. And you should always test drive a vehicle before purchasing it, because you never know what unexpected factors will come into play. For example, I discovered that the Ilya Cloud had a windshield that was kind of the wrong height for me. And I didn't like the dashboard arrangement of the Dodge Cormorant. We picked up Violet at the mall and took her with us. Both she and me were really excited by the whole thing, and we were chatting really fast the whole time about what color to get and whether the red was too cheesy or whether it was autumnal, which is what she said. We took them out to test drive with my father sitting next to me. He'd be chatting with someone somewhere else while I drove. He'd be looking out the window and wincing whenever Violet or I talked out loud. He had trouble thinking and hearing at the same time. When he was done chatting, he'd ask me a question out loud like, "How's she feel?"
Violet would tell me, "Resist the feed. Look into ox carts."
"Yeah, thanks, Violet," my father would say. "We're having serious decision flux here." He'd ask me, "What do you think?" I'd tell him about the handling or the lift. Violet would say,
"How about a howdah?"
Dad would ask, "What's a howdah?"
"A seat on elephant back."
"Great. Great. Thanks." Me and Violet walked up and down the rows of up cars. I was thinking about the Swarp and the Dodge Griffin. The Swarp didn't have as much room in the back. It was a little sportier. The Dodge Griffin had a larger back seat for your friends and shit, but it was a little lumbering. So here was the decision. Dodge was bannering me with me driving and all of these people in bikinis stuffed into the car with me, this big party, and with a beach ball too, like I could be the scene. And Nanjin, who made the Swarp, was showing a romantic drive through the mountains with just me and Violet, who they got pretty much right, except they made her taller and with bigger boobs. And they made her cheeks kind of sparkly in a way that, if it were really happening, I would try to wipe off with a face cloth. I didn't know which to choose, because if I got an up car that was too small, then Link and Marty might be like, "We'll take my car instead, more of us can fit in." And then I would have to spend these hundreds of thousands of dollars for nothing. But if I bought the Swarp, it was a little more sporty, and that might be brag, because the Dodge Griffin was maybe too family.
"So you're getting this as a reward for being in the hospital?" Violet asked.
"I guess."
"A little present from Mommy and Daddy?"
"Yeah, they're buying it." She thought about this for a minute. Then she shook her head.
"You're lucky."
"Are you saying I'm spoiled?"
"No."
"It seems like that's what you mean."
"No, that's not it."
I thought for a second and said, "So what is it?"
"Nothing."
"Look, it's like a reward. I'm going to turn in evidence in court and everything. I mean, you are too, but we're going to have to go to court against that guy. We should get something for that. We deserve it."
She looked at me strangely.
"What?"
I said. "No one's told you?"
I waited. Her eyebrow was arched. Finally, I gave in and said, "No, no one's told me what."
"We're not going to court."
"We got out of it? My dad was trying to get us out of it."
"He didn't need to. The guy was dead."
"What? How?"
"He died a day after we went into the hospital. Contusions, broken skull."
"What are contusions?" I looked it up.
"Oh, he was beaten to death at the club. We saw it. The police, remember? They beat him over the head."
She reached out and took my arm. My father walked towards us across the pavement, waving. The plastic flags were flapping in the artificial wind while Muzak came out of heaven. I bought the Dodge. A question of moral. That night, we all had dinner together, my family and Violet. My dad was real proud of me and was all, "He drove home behind me. Can you, like, believe this shit? Our own son with his own up car?" I couldn't stop smiling. "Yeah," I was like, "it's Meg Bragg." My mom smiled at me. Smell Factor wasn't listening to anything. He had some crappy kids' music show blasting in his feed so loud his odd nerves were probably shot. He had a bunny plate and was making something with his burrito.
"Are you going to take Violet out in it?"
Mom asked. "Tomorrow. She and me are driving out to, like, the country. She wants to go for a walk. I'm picking her up." I couldn't help grinning like a shithead again. Violet smiled back at me.
"There's a forest," said Violet. "It's called Jefferson Park. We're thinking about going either there or out to beef country."
My dad nodded. "It'll have to be beef country," he said. "The forest is gone."
Jefferson Park? He nodded, then squinted while he, like, clawed something off the roof of his mouth with his tongue. He told us,
yeah, Jefferson Park? Yeah, I was knocked down to make an air factory.
You're kidding, said Violet.
Yeah, that's what happened, said Dad, shrugging. You've got to have air.
Violet pointed out, trees make air, which kind of worried me because I knew Dad would think it was snotty. My father stared at her for a long time, then he said,
yeah, sure. Do you know how inefficient trees are next to an air factory?
But we need trees.
For what? He said. I mean, they're nice and it's too bad, but like, do you know how much real estate costs?
I can't believe they cut it down. Mom said to Smell Factor, hey, stop playing with your food.
Smell Factor was head-banging with the feed music and turning his bunny plate around and around with his little pudgy fingers.
My father told him, this is dinner together. That means family networking and defragging time.
They cut down Jefferson Park? That is so like corporate.
My father nodded and smiled at her with his meg-condescending smile on his face and was like,
dude, I remember when I was like you. You should grow up to be a, you know, clean air worker or something. Don't lose that. But remember, it's about people. People need a lot of air.
For a minute, we all ate without saying anything. Violet looked either angry or embarrassed. I chatted her about being sorry for what Dad said, but she didn't chat me back. I thought Dad was being kind of a jerk to Violet. I wanted to say something like, something that would be, you know, something about how she was more right than he was. I said, hey, Violet told me we're not going to court.
About what? My mother said.
We were like assaulted? I said, remember? The thing on the moon?
Yeah, sure, said my dad. No, he's dead. There's no trial. We've all talked about suing. We'll probably sue the nightclub, maybe the police.
I said, no one told me he was dead. My father chewed some.
Smell Factor was banging his head and singing along with the feed, intercural or oral, ain't a question of moral.
My father said to me,
there wasn't any reason for you to know.
Yes, there was.
No, there wasn't.
It's my feed.
You just get worried.
I want to get worried. If there's like some Meg thing wrong.
Intercural or oral ain't a question of moral.
My mom reached over and touched me on the wrist and said,
you're safe.
Dad said,
you have an up car.
The lunatic is dead, said my mother. There's nothing to worry about.
Violet said, it was frightening for all of us.
Yeah, sure, said Dad, dismissing her kind of jerkily. But that's no reason.
Intercural or oral ain't a question of moral.
Smell Factor,
that's not his name, said my mother. Intercural or oral ain't a question of moral.
What would you?
Intercural or oral ain't a question of moral.
Hey, yelled my mother. Hey, you, we don't sing at the table.
You're acting out of line, said my father, pointing at me. I'm really disappointed.
Doing what? I said. I'm just asking.
Dude, I just bought you an up car and you're being a brat.
You're not being a brat, Violet chatted.
Stop chatting, said my dad. What are you saying?
Let them alone, Steve, said Mom.
Suddenly I saw Violet freeze and her eyes stopped moving and her face got all white. My dad was saying,
look, we're going to sue the nightclub, okay?
Sure, I said, whatever.
Quits?
Quits.
Now maybe you better take the girl home. In the new up car, with the keys I just held out in my palm like a gift. Oh, because it was a gift.
My father got up all pissy and took the dishes into the kitchen. He rattled them against the rim of the junk tube as he threw them away. They crashed down into the thing, the incinerator.
You okay? I said to Violet. We should go. It's just, my foot's fallen asleep.
Shake it, I said.
She looked down at the table. I mean, my foot isn't working. Don't say anything. It's happened a couple times since the hack. Something just won't work for an hour or two. My finger or something.
I was like,
holy shit, are you okay?
I'm fine.
Do you want some water?
Titus, don't worry about it. It'll go away in a minute. It was just the stress.
Try to move the foot. Just try.
She just sat there, smiling kind of sick, not moving, while right next to her, Mom and Smell Factor crinkled up the disposable table together and threw it away. Violet was still in her chair, near where the table had been. She was alone in the middle of the rug. Finally, she moved the foot. She moved it slowly in circles. She breathed out really deep. Her eyes were closed like it was sex. I held out my hand and pulled her to her feet. She came to my arms like we were doing some kind of flamenco rumpus. My mom smiled, and my dad, who was still pissed, said, "Yeah, cute." We left a few minutes later. I drove her most of the way to her house, and we met her father at a mall parking lot. It was a new mall with lots of spotlights swinging through the sky and rainbows going up a giant pyramid. We had to wait a few minutes for her dad to get there. We just sat together, holding hands, in my new Dodge Griffin. I asked, "You sure you're okay?" "I'm fine. It goes away." I leaned my head against the window, and we were quiet. She was looking at her knees, and she asked me, "What are you thinking about?" I looked behind us. I sighed, and I was drumming my fingers on the steering column and all, and I said, "What if it really doesn't handle as good? You know, it's roomier, but what if it doesn't handle as good as the Swarb?" She nodded, and she said, "Are you at least okay with the color?" "It's a good red," I said, "I guess." "Autumnal," she said. "It's nice." "You sure it's not, like, cheap?" "It's fall-like." I smiled. "Thanks," she said. "I'm a peach." "Yeah, you're a peach." Her father was landing. I couldn't see him through the glare of his windshield. She got out of the car. She kissed me. I said I would see her the next morning. She kept turning and waving as she walked away across the pavement. The spotlights wobbled over the clouds. The pyramid glowed. I rose up into the sky and turned the feed on to songs about people allowed to get out of the same bed and eat breakfast together, two toasts on the very same plate.
'Cause if love can't help us from above, can't help us like a dove, with wings so full of love, then let me go. And if hope is nothing but a door who's holding on to rope, then I don't think I can cope. So let me go, darling.
Observe the remarkable verdure. The next day, I followed my feed's directions to her house. I drove about 200 miles to get to the general area. It was a good day for a walk in the country because there were these big occasional clouds, but mostly blue. The sun was reflecting in darts off all the up cars that passed me. Her neighborhood was down a long drop tube. I kept on going down and down through all these different suburbs called Fox Glen and Caleby Farm Estates and Waterview Park until I hit the bottom of the tube where it was called Creville Heights. Creville Heights was all one big area, instead of each yard having its own bubble with its own sun and seasons. They must have had just one sun for the whole place. All the houses were really old and flat. The streets were blue and cracked. And they were streets, I mean, like for when things were on the ground. Their sun was up, and you could see the sky was peeling. I found her house, which was a little house with her parents' up car parked outside it and some kind of sculpture in the yard with some hoops or loops and a floating spiky ball. I parked next to the house with the up car still levitated, and I climbed down and went to the door. The doorbell played a piece of music, which I could hear through the door, which was wood. She came to the door, and she was all smiling, and she was so glad to see me, and I was glad to see her. She invited me in to meet her dad, who was at home. I went in. The place was a mess. Everything had words on it.
There were papers with words on them, and books, and even posters on the wall had words. Her father looked like a crank. He was sitting in a lawn chair in the living room, hunched over like a hunchback, sorting puzzle pieces. His back honestly had a big hunch, which was from a really, really early feed scanner, from back when they wore them in a big backpack on their back, with special glasses that had fold-out screens on either side of your eyes. He wore the glasses, too, and when we shook hands, I could see pictures and words reflecting on his eyeballs, like when you stir water in the sun. He held out his hand. He said, "It is a fine pleasure to meet you and make your acquaintance." He had a very slight smile, which didn't change when he moved his mouth. He spoke with his buzzing, flat kind of voice. He said, "I am filled with astonishment at the regularity of your features and the handsome generosity you have shown my daughter. The two of you are close, which gladdens the heart, as close as twin wings torn off the same butterfly." Violet said, "You can see why I don't take him out in public much." "The sarcasm of my daughter notwithstanding, it is nonetheless an occasion of great moment to meet one of her erotic attachments. In the line of things, she has not brought them home, but has chosen instead to conduct her trysts at remote locales, perhaps beach huts or oxygen-rich confabularies." "The surprising thing is," said Violet, "when he flunked out of charm school, it was because he couldn't learn the minuet." "She meets them at the drama, I presume, or speakeasies." "Why don't we leave," Violet suggested, "while my last shred of dignity is still at least as big as a thong." I was like, it was real good to meet you, I said. "We're going out into the country for the day. I'll take real good care of her." I was trying to be like a man to another man, like responsible. He nodded. He flattened his hand and lifted off with it like it was a Dodge Griffin, and he was making an engine noise. And then he flew his hand towards some books and landed it. He made these chirpy noises, like the windows rolling down. He said in a high-pitched voice, like a teensy-weensy kind of voice,
"Ooh, observe the remarkable verdure. Little friend, I am master of all I survey."
I nodded. Violet had the door opened. We went out and climbed into the Griffin. We pulled on our seatbelts. "Wow," I said.
"Yeah."
I lifted us off and we floated down the street. "He's something."
"So far as my social life goes, what strikes me as a good idea is leaving him in the basement wrapped in a cocoon of pink insulation."
I didn't understand a single thing he said.
"He says the language is dying. He thinks words are being debased, so he tries to speak entirely in weird words and irony, so no one can simplify anything he says."
We turned a corner. "Where's your mom?" I asked.
"Probably South America," Violet said. "She likes it warm."
"Are they divorced?"
"They never married."
"Your life, it must be kind of strange."
"Meaning what?"
"Just, it's not the things that most of us do."
"No,"
she said, like she wanted to change the topic. I hit the drop tube, and we fell up. A day in the country. We flew for an hour or so out into farm country. While we flew, she told me the story of her family, which was that her mom and dad met when they were in grad school and decided to live together as an experiment in lifestyle and had her. Then everything was fine for a few years, but when she was about 6 or 7, her parents started, like, fighting all the time and yelling all the time and stuff, and her mother ran away. I asked her if that was when her father started to get like he was, I mean, hard to understand, and she said he was always hard to understand, but after her mother left was when he started to get completely like he was. She played me some of the saved memories of him lecturing. He was pacing up and down through the lecture hall, and he was saying, "In the 90s, the older programming languages, with their emphasis on neoclassical, even Aristotelian logical structures, gave way to object-oriented interactive structures." His shoes scraped along the tiled floor. He looked all his students in the eye like he was challenging them to a fight. He leaned toward them and said, "In object-oriented programming, discrete software objects interface more freely in a system of corporate service provisions that mirrored the emergent structures of late capitalism." Who the hell knows what he meant? But suddenly he seemed kind of powerful, like someone who shouldn't necessarily be wound up in a cocoon of pink insulation and hidden in the basement somewhere. He was like a different guy. She said the only time he actually talked like a normal human being was sometimes when he was big tired and they were eating dinner before he went to bed. She and he took turns making dinner. They had just got a kitchenette food synthesizer. She asked for my family story, but it wasn't as interesting. Just da-da-da, my parents met through some friend, da-da-da, they went out, they started to live together, da-da-da, they went to Venus, da-da-da. You know, they're sitting in this restaurant on Venus, back when Venus was called the Love Planet, with love pronounced Lerv, back before the molting quakes and the uprisings. So they're sitting there, and my dad holds up his hand, and it has this big lump on one of the fingers, like some kind of cyst. And my mom's like, "Steve, what's that? Is it malignant?" And he goes, "Honey, I hope it's benign." And he pulls a little pull tab and the skin unpeels, and under it is an engagement ring for her already on his finger. So he takes it off and slips it on her finger, and it constricts and clamps on. And she's like, "Oh my God, oh my God." And everyone in the restaurant starts clapping. And she's like, "No, I don't have any circulation in my finger." And so they had to go to a jeweler really quick and get it adjusted, which is why whenever they have a fight and make up, my mom always has this joke. She goes, "Yep, married and with the scars to prove it." Felt good to hear Violet's story and to tell mine, even though hers was kind of more interesting than mine. I said it must be hard for her dad to bring her up and homeschool her himself. She said it was, that he worked really hard at it. And also worked really hard teaching. She was proud of him, even though he was, from what I could see, like in my opinion, an insane psychopath. Our feeds caught a banner from a farm that invited visitors, where you could walk around and see everything grow. So we swerved for there and landed. There weren't many other people there that day, so we were almost alone while we walked around. It was real peaceful. We walked along holding hands, and our elbows rubbed too. Violet wasn't wearing sleeves, so I could see the little frowns made by her elbows. It smelled like the country. It was a filet mignon farm, all of it, and the tissue spread for miles around the paths where we were walking. It was like these huge hedges of red all around us, with these beautiful marble patterns running through them. They had these tubes, they were bringing the tissue blood, and we could see the blood running around, up and down. It was really interesting. I like to see how things are made and to understand where they come from. It was a perfect afternoon. They'd made part of it into a steak maze for tourists, and we split up in the steak maze and tried to see who could get to the center first. We were like running around corners and peeking and diving, and there were these mirrors set up to confuse you so you'd see all these non-existent beef hallways. We were big laughing, and we'd run into each other and growl and back away. There were other tourists in the steak maze, too, and they thought we were cute. Then we sat and had some cider donuts that we bought at the farm stand. We got some that were plain and some cinnamon. I like the cinnamon better. Violet said it was important to start with the plain so that the cinnamon seemed more like a change. She said she had a theory that everything was better if you delayed it. She had this whole thing about self-control, okay, and the importance of self-control. For example, she said, when she bought something, she wouldn't let herself order it for a long time. And then she would just go to the purchase site and show it to herself. Then she'd let herself get fed the scent sim, you know. She'd let herself know how it would feel or what it would smell like. Then she would go away and wouldn't look for a week. Then she would go back, finally, and order it, but only if it was on back order and wouldn't be shipped immediately. Then finally, when it was ready to ship, she'd like be, "Oh, hey, I don't want it shipped hour rate. I want it slow, slow rate." So it'd take like 3 days to get to her. And then she'd leave it in the box. Finally, she'd open the box just enough to see like the hem of the skirt or whatever. She would touch it, just knowing it was hers. She'd run her fingers along it, kind of delicate, just along the edge of it, not even really letting herself touch it completely, just gently with her fingertips or maybe the back of her hand. She would wait for days until she couldn't stand it anymore to take it out and try it on. At this point, I was completely turned on. I wanted to get more donuts, but it was this debate between getting more donuts, which were really good donuts, but not being able to stand up because I had complete prong. So we sat for a while just where we were, and I flattened out the donut bag with my hand on the tabletop. You could tell how good the donuts were because they left a clear ring on the paper. Later, we went and climbed up an observation tower over the farm. It was getting to be sunset, so it was meg pretty. We were sitting side by side with our legs swinging on the wall of the tower, and the clouds were all turning pink in front of us. We could see all these miles of filet mignon from where we were sitting, and some places where the genetic coding had gone wrong, and there, in the middle of the beef, the tissue had formed a horn or an eye or a heart blinking up at the sunset, which was this brag red and which hit on all those miles of muscle and made it flex and quiver with all these shudders running across the top of it. And birds were flying over, crying, kind of sad, maybe seagulls looking for garbage. And the whole thing with the beef and the birds and the sky, it all glowed like there was a light inside it, which it was time to show us now. Later, when we were flying back in the dark, lit up by the dashboard, she asked me, "If you could die any way you wanted, how would you like to?" I said, "Why are you asking?" She said, "I've just been thinking about it a lot." I thought for a while, and then I said, "I'd like to have this, like, this intense pleasure in every one of my senses, all of them so full up that they just burst me open, and the feed, like, going a mile a second, so that it's like every channel is just jammed with excitement, and it's going faster and faster and better until just bam! That's it, I guess. I'd like to die from some kind of sense overload." She nodded. I said, "I'm going to do that when I get real old and boring," she said. "Yeah. You know, I think death is shallower now. It used to be a hole you fell into and kept falling. Now it's just a blank." We flew over a lake. The bottom had been covered with a huge blue ad that was lit up and magnified by the water, which had a picture of a smiling brain and broadcasted Dynacom Inc. when you looked at it. I was like, "What are you asking for?" She said, "It makes good times even better when you know they're going to end. Like grilled vegetables are better because some of them is partly soot." Well, I wanted to point out that it was probably because her dad made them, but if someone good makes them, they're probably not partly soot. But I didn't think that was her point about vegetables, so I just kept flying, and I said, "This was a good time." And she said, "One of the best." And I said, "So when it's time for them to do a pleasure overload on me, are you going to be around to give the order to cut the juice?" She looked at me, surprised. For a second, she was like completely confused. It was like I'd said something else. Then she saw what I meant, and she laughed like I'd given her a present. She said, "If you let me, sure. Sure, I'll be there." She leaned over, really sudden, and kissed me on the cheek. And then she whispered, "I'll be the first one, dumpling, to pull your plug." The way she said it, "pull your plug," it sounded kind of sexy. Right then, everything seemed perfect. I dropped her off and we planned other things and did a secret handshake. I drove back toward home listening to some brag new triumph screams by British Storm and Chunder bands. When I got home, the lights were out, but they came on for me. I walked through the empty house and got ready for bed and lay there thinking about how perfect everything was. I could feel my family all around me. I could trace their feeds faintly because they weren't shielding them. Smell Factor was dreaming while a fun sight with talking giraffes sang him songs and showed him wonderful things in different shapes. My parents were upstairs going in mal, which they wouldn't want me to know, but which I could tell because they chose a really flashy, expensive malfunction site that was easy to trace. They were winding down together, I guess. Like, you can only go on being completely fugue-stressed for so long without winding down. I could feel all my family asleep in their own way around me. In the empty house, in our bubble, where we could turn on and off the sun and the stars, and the feed spoke to me real quiet about new trends, about pants that should be shorter or longer, and bands I should know, and games with new levels and stalactites and fields of diamonds, and friends of many colors were all drinking Coke, and beer was washing through mountain passes, and the stars of Oh Wow Thing had got lesions, so lesions were hip now, real hip, and mine looked like $1 million. The sun was rising over foreign countries, and underwear was cheap, and there were new techniques to reconfigure pecs, abs, and nipples, and the President of the United States was certain of the future,
and at Weatherby and Crotch, there was a sail banner and nice rugby shirts, and there were pictures of freckled prep school boys and girls in chinos playing on the beach and dry-humping in the eelgrass. And as I fell asleep, the feed murmured to me again and again,
"All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well."
First, in the deserts and belts arose oral culture, the culture of the spoken word. Then in the cities with their temples and bazaars came the pictographs, and later symbols that produced sounds as if by magic, and what followed was written culture. Then in the universities and under the steeples of young nations, print culture. These, oral culture, written culture, the culture of print, these have always been considered the great epics of man. But we have entered a new age. We are a new people. It is now the age of oniric culture, the culture of dreams. And we are the nation of dreams. We are seers. We are wizards. We speak in visions. Our letters are like flocks of doves released from under our hats. We have only to stretch out our hand and desire, and what we wish for settles like a kerchief in our palm. We are a race of sorcerers, enchanters. We are Atlantis. We are the Wizard Isle of Mu. What we wish for is ours. It is the age of oniric culture. And we, America, we are the nation of dreams.
Nudging again. Later that night, I had nightmares. Someone was poking my head with a broom handle. They tried to put it, like, in my ear. They said, "Whispering makes a narrow place narrower." Then came all these pictures, and I was seeing all over the world, and there were explanations, but I was still asleep, and I couldn't figure them out. I saw khakis that were really cheap, only $150, but I didn't like the stitching. And then I saw them torn, and there was blood on them. It was a riot on the street, and people were screaming in some other language. They were in khakis or jeans and t-shirts, and they were throwing stones and bottles, and the police were moving forward on horses, and a man in the crowd waved a gun, and then the firing started. They were in front of factories, and clouds of gas drifted through them, and the American flags they were burning started to spark big, and the gas got darker and darker, and the people sped up like a joke, grabbing at their necks and waving and sitting and slapping the ground. They fell down. I saw a sign with a picture of a head with a little devil sitting in the brain, inside the skull, with these, like, energy bolts coming out of his mouth. I saw fields and fields of black. It was this disgusting black shit spread for miles. I saw walls of concrete fall from the sky and crush little wood houses. I saw a furry animal trying to stand up on its legs, but the back ones were broken or not working, and it dragged itself with the front ones, whimpering, through some place with gray dust and needles coming out of the sand. Its jaws were open. I saw long cables going through the sea. I saw girls sewing things, little girls in big halls. I saw people praying over missiles. I smelled the summer in this rocky place, and the summer smelled like electrical burns. I saw a kid looking at me. He was a kid from another culture where they wear dresses. And there were all these shadows all over his face, these amazing shadows. And I thought it was a really cool picture to get all of those weird shadows somehow, but with nothing making them. And finally, I realized that they weren't shadows. They were bruises. And then the end of a gun, it's called the butt, it came down and hit him in the face, and then all the pictures were over.
"Hey," said Violet. "Hey, was that you?"
I was like,
"What? What's the thing with the...
Did I wake you up?"
"Okay, could... Is she...
Hey, look lively. Someone was just nosing around my feed, checking out my specs and sending me all these images."
"It was probably a corporation. Don't... Oh, Unit, I can't believe you completely jolted me. I was having this weird-ass dreaming."
"I don't think it was a corporation. They didn't have a tag."
"Don't you have a shield?"
"They got right whammed through the shield."
"Oh, Unit. Oh, Unit, I'm... Do you know how asleep I was?"
"I called FeedTech Customer Assistance. I'm going to report this. Something's happening."
"Oh, okay. Shit. Okay. So can I go, like, back to sleep?
You sure it wasn't you?
Unet, it wasn't me. I was so asleep, it was like 10 asleep factor.
They can trace who it was, I bet.
Yeah, maybe.
You didn't see any of this? The images?
What of?
There's someone else here. Can you feel it?
Who?
Someone else. They just tapped in just a second ago.
A voice said,
Hi, this is Nina from FeedTech Customer Assistance.
Thank God.
Are you tired of the same old shoulders? Why not try extensions?
Violet was like,
Someone just approached my feed. They were checking the specs and stats.
And what can I do to help you this morning?
You need to follow them and see who it was. Quickly.
Violet, I'd love to respond personally to each and every request for assistance, but unfortunately I'm unable to due to increased customer demand. So I've sent this automated intelligence, Nina, to talk to you instead.
No, you don't understand.
Looking at your recent purchase history, I notice that you've expressed interest in a lot of products you haven't bought. Are you having trouble making up your mind with so much cool stuff to choose from?
Can you please connect me with a live operator?
Violet, I think I can help you come up with products that really say you. They'll shout, you, as if it was always Saturday. Oh, I know, you're almost a woman, and you want things that are totally big, Violet. That's where I can help.
All right,
chatted Violet.
No thanks. Thanks. I'm done.
Sometimes choices are hard to make.
Fuck off.
This automated intelligence, Nina, can help you throw away the bad and find the good. I can help you find the great products that are uniquely the woman known as Ms. Violet Dern.
Fuck off.
Okay, it doesn't seem like you want to talk right now, so I'm going back to my little hole. There, I'll be sorting and sifting and trying to make life as easy and interesting as possible for you and your friend and all our excellent customers at FeedTech, making your dreams into hard fact.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a big lot.
And thank you, Violet Dern of 1421 Applebaum Avenue. I'll look forward to helping you again whenever you...
Can I go back to sleep?
I asked.
I had these really weird dreams.
Violet seemed kind of without any energy. She was like,
Go ahead. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
We said goodnight. She was slow. I turned over and curled up, and the pictures playing in my head now were better. Not so violent or sucky. They were more of women in turtlenecks petting my hair. I heard some music. I fell asleep. It was a deep sleep. And I didn't wake up until morning.